I've listened to a few of your podcasts again, and that was indeed a question. What's the first thing I can remember of life was football?
Football?
Playing football, yeah. Running after a ball.
Situated for us, whereabouts were we?
Amsterdam. A court. No, not a court.
Like
a pitch. And you have a lot of those pitches around Amsterdam, and I was always playing with the neighborhood kids, playing football, and that would be my first memory.
That's like. Cool. And so were you a city boy? Did you grow up in the Dam most of
yeah,
you?
Yeah. Grew up in a city. Like.
And like, are we talking like gravel pitches like you would have over here where, you know, is it grass? Is it AstroTurf?
Tarmac.
Yeah.
Just tarmac.
Epic.
Tarmac. So
that's, hard as nails, knees.
That's it. Playing football, hitting a few balls. As well as that, when I was a bit older, we moved to a house where there was a big grass pitch in front. So, and every single day I was playing on that pitch. I was trying to hit the crossbar or whatever. Even if it was alone or there was other people, I was on that pitch. Like.
So good. What did mom and dad do?
My father had a wee shop. He sold photo cameras and photo camera equipment. And he was, actually, he was a photographer. And my mom was a nurse.
Wow.
So an incredible man. He still is. But my father was always in the shadow of my grandfather, which was a big, big businessman. One of the
really
bigger entrepreneurs of his time. Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And what did Grandpa do?
Funny enough, he saved a lot of people in the war. Like
really.
By falsifying food stamps in the Netherlands. Like Amsterdam was a Jewish city, so there was a lot of people that weren't allowed to eat. Because they were Jewish, etc., and starvation, or I don't know how you call it in English. I can really, really well explain this in Dutch, but he falsified food stamps.
Wow.
And that's how he got into photography, and he became a very, very important photographer as well for the Dutch royal family. And
Your granddad?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I didn't know this about you.
No, you didn't?
No.
Funny enough, he has a park named after him in the Netherlands, like Nico van der Horst Park. There's no joke. Google it.
So it's funny because if you were to have a wee gander here, my very brief notes that I've made for this, you would see a question that says, ask Nico about the park sign.
Yeah.
And where that's ended up.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I could have asked the council for that sign because
sure.
I'm named after my father and my father's named after my grandfather, so we carry the same name. But I claim that park to be mine. It's actually now a housing estate as well, so they expanded it and there's like 900 houses there as well. So I needed to steal that road sign, but I mean, I could have easily gone to the council and ask for that, but that's not how we roll. We just take it. Like my name is on it. Like
100%. I mean, 100%.
That's how it works. So funny enough, this was a few years ago, a good few years ago, where I stole that sign. Yeah, that's my pride and joy. Like,
where is it?
It's in my house.
Class.
I think they figured it out because I was in the Netherlands not too long ago and I passed by. I always pass by, right?
Sure, yeah.
For me, it's quite important, right? My grandfather passed away when I was 10 days before I turned 10. No, sorry, a month prior to me turning 10.
Yeah.
Right? And every grandchild or every single one of his grandchildren got a bicycle when they turned 10.
Really?
I didn't got a fucking bicycle.
You missed it.
I missed it.
Ah,
raging.
Grandpops, what the heck?
Raging. Raging. No, absolute legend of a man, mate. Absolute legend. Very, very proud. My father was always always in his shadow. And and now looking backwards to that, now you realize that, but you don't really realize that when you're younger or when you're... Yeah, when you're going to school or when you're... Yeah. Not that I was at school very much, but I mean...
But I mean, it's a classic thing, you know? It's like if Ronaldo's kid goes into football.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough.
Johan Cruyff, Jordi Cruyff.
That is tough, like...
Mate, Johan Cruyff, Jordi Cruyff's exactly the same. Except with the goalkeepers then, Peter Schmeichel and what was his...
Oh, mate, you know Denmark me in football. Like,
no,
I'm proud of myself because I watched the England match last night.
It's coming home. What's coming home? It's never been home, mate. What are you talking about?
So good. So good. So, I mean, you know, you talk about the sign. You know, you'd say the sign's a bit of a prized possession.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, you know, for you and your business, you kind of deal in the industry of prized possessions and things that go beyond even monetary value.
Yes.
You know, we've known each other a few years, and many's a times I'll see you and you're wearing an amazing watch, like the watch you're wearing today. Tell us what you're wearing today.
I'm actually, this is not my watch. This is the watch that's owned by the business. So nowadays, like we now have a different, back in the day, I owned everything. Now I own fuck all. But anyway, this is a root beer. This is a Rolex GMT Master 2, reference number 126711CH. NRCH stands for chocolate, and NR stands for noir. The root beer, as we call that, absolutely love that watch. But I sold my own personal watch yesterday.
Oh,
and like a really special watch, a six-figure watch, right?
Unbelievable.
Very, very special watch. Mm-hmm. And sold it yesterday, and out of respect, I still have it here, but out of respect, I just put it in the box, and I'm not allowed to wear it then anymore. Yeah. So
it's great. So, you know, you are surrounded by these amazing watches, very often very expensive watches, but often I see you rocking just this modest, very impressive little golden watch.
Yes.
Tell me about that watch.
How did you still remember that? Yeah, that's my grandfather's watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, funny enough. It was grandfather Seiko. I was wearing it 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's very, very special, yeah. My grandfather had a big impact on me. Mm-hmm. My father had a big impact on me, obviously. And I'm just very proud. I'm very grateful for what my father taught me, mm-hmm. and what my grandfather has done. That will stick by me for not just by me, but for another generation and for a lot of other people, which mm-hmm. he's done incredible stuff for. And yeah, he passed away in 1995, and he's still there, if you know what I mean.
Totally,
so,
man.
Funny enough.
So weird. Yeah, but I admit, you're preaching to the choir. I totally get that.
Well, I didn't expect this conversation, to be completely honest. I didn't expect that, but...
Yeah, look, I had a granddad and he died. I don't know, I must have been about five. But I would say, like, if you were to look at mentors or people that have influenced my life, I would say it would be him. You know, because even from the grave, through stories I hear or through things my granny tells me, or even just through, like, various other influences, you know, I totally feel like he shaped my life. So no, I get that.
My grandfather was this big entrepreneur, right? Mm. And he'd done well, and he had a lot of shops as well and built that from nothing, right? And my father took over not the full business, but one of the shops. And my father was just always in the shadow, and always, my father wasn't that big entrepreneur, but my father had the work ethic.
Yeah.
Like, I work 17 hours a day, mm-hmm. without exception, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Without exception. And that's my father, right? That mm-hmm. man has worked his entire life mm-hmm. to provide for me and my sister. Mm-hmm. Like, absolute, like I only saw my father when he would bring me to football.
Sure.
So he was working in that wee shop and always hustling, always hustling, right? He wasn't the big visionary, which my grandfather was. He was in the shadow of my grandfather, and he had different qualities. And I just look back. I want the visionary of my the visionary quality or whatever you call that in English. I want that from my grandfather, and that work ethic.
Yeah.
Unrelentless work ethic.
Yeah. I would say, like, you know, from an observer's perspective, like, I would say you are a blend of the two, which is pretty formidable, like, when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object.
I mean, I appreciate that, but, like, I'm not gonna lie, it's been an incredibly rough road. My working career has been a very, very rough road in every way possible. Totally. When I moved from the Netherlands, because I hated it with every bone in my body. I just didn't feel at home, and I failed in absolutely everything I did. And I needed change, and I needed a new place, I needed new scenery, I needed a new start. hey, new life. And then you come to Belfast and then it's like the same. Like it didn't, like now looking backwards and me as a person as well, because I'm very, very, I critique myself. I'm very hard on myself, which I, I was a lazy, stupid idiot in every way possible. Like 100%.
Yeah.
I look myself in the mirror, I was like I'm such a different person than I was back then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and today I'm even a bit different person than I was last year.
Yeah.
Or the time that we met for the first time,
the Nico I met, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and the Nico I know now is totally different.
Yeah.
You know.
So, but like for me, it is, I'm very hard on myself. I need to improve because people deserve the best of me. Mm-hmm. So I need to work on me.
Yeah.
And you just need to be dead honest towards, me.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. And my God, it's been a hell of a road. Fuck me, like, unbelievable.
Well, I tell you what, look, I'm the worst host ever. It's 10 minutes in, I haven't even done my intro. This podcast is unbelievable. I'm literally so excited for this one. Look, if you've jumped in, hello and welcome to Best of Belfast. This is the podcast that celebrates Northern Ireland and the incredible people in it. We've already been hearing from the man himself, doesn't need any introduction, so I'll keep it very short and sweet before moving forward. This is Nico van der Hurst. I've always struggled with your last name, sorry.
Yeah, this is what are you talking about? You're half German nowadays anyway.
I know, I really should put lean on my German skills. Ah, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, but Nico, look, honestly, he runs the largest independent watch retailer in the island of Ireland.
Yeah.
He's coming close to the UK there.
We have our eyes on the prize, yeah, 100%.
Pride and Pinion is the name of his business. He also, in the last year, has just supersalted into social media stardom. He now has the biggest watch. I just learned this before the interview, new facts. He now has the biggest watch social media on the planet.
Yeah, on the planet. Watch, the biggest social media presence in the watch world on the planet, period.
And mate, this is from an office that we're sitting in Belfast.
Yeah.
He's a shop across the road in the Merchant Hotel, The Vault, which is beyond luxurious. If you're ever in the Merchant, you have to pay. It's worth going to the Merchant just to see The Vault. It is literally like a museum for luxury watches. And we've already covered a lot of ground, but I'm just really excited to jump into this weird and magical world of luxury watches, and also your story, mate, of how
I've waited 4 years to get this fucking invitation, mate. 4 years I wanted this invitation, and finally I'm good enough for it,
mate. No, we're loving it.
I'm really, really proud. I don't do many podcasts, and because of social media and the traffic that we gain, I get a lot of requests, which is incredible.
Yeah,
and I'm very grateful for that.
You'd be doing 10 a day, you'd be doing 20 a day.
Yeah, I would be and I'm like,
full-time podcast.
I finally get this text from Matthew, and it's like, fucking hell, what a dick, finally. So I'm like, yep, no bother.
Unbelievable, mate. So look, let's kick off then with, you know, we've talked about father, talked about grandfather, let's talk a wee bit about watches before going into how you got here. So talk to me a wee bit about the generational aspect of watches, because I remember whenever we worked together and we were doing some early stuff for the brand, you showed me, you know, Patek Philippe, and you're talking to a guy here who had no idea about watches, and you Rolex, and that was about it. And you're like, do you know what Patek Philippe's tagline is? I was like, no. And you were like, mate, you don't ever own a Patek Philippe, you just take care of it for the next generation.
Yes.
And when you said that to me, I was just like, that is one of the most unbelievable phrases ever written by any brand ever. Yeah. But in some ways, that is, there's a lot imbued into a watch. Like you talked about your grandfather's watch. There's a lot of memories. There's a lot of stories that get passed down. So talk a wee bit
about that. So there's not many things in the world that can be handed down by generations after generation, and which you can still wear every single day or can carry with you every single day, right? There could be a coin that you can put in a wallet, but I mean, you can keep that in that wallet for the rest of your life, but it's a coin, mate.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what are we you can wear your grandfather's shirt if you want to, and wear it.
Stamp collection. Stamp, like, what are you going to do with that?
I mean, there's nothing really other than jewelry.
Yeah.
And let's call jewelry then. what you can have, where people can have a story with, attach a story, attach mm-hmm. themselves, their story, or identify themselves with that story. You see what I mean? And I feel, I just feel superpower when I put my grandfather's watch on. I just feel it feels good. It feels right because mm-hmm. I know he wore it. And there's not many things in the world that can give you that feeling. Mm-hmm. And if it's jewelry, it's more feminine. Mm-hmm. Watches is a real man.
Super, yeah.
It's a real man's Absolutely. Thing. So for a man, I always say a watch is the only legitimate jewelry a man is allowed to wear. I will keep saying that for the rest of my life. But, and we're not talking about wedding rings now.
Sure.
There's nothing really what a man can wear. It says a lot about a man, but the watch says a lot about a man, mm-hmm. right? A lot. Mm-hmm. Of course, as let's call a spade, everyone makes judgments on the first moment you see someone. You can say that you don't, but that's bollocks.
Yeah, it's not
that's
true.
Just bollocks. Everyone does that, mm-hmm. right? You do that subconsciously or not, you do that on purpose or not on purpose, mm-hmm. right? But everyone does that. And I mean, like that's what a watch does. It tells a lot about you and about your story, about your history, about mm-hmm. who you are and what you stand for.
Totally. And if you even think about it from a brand perspective, you know, these brands have been going for hundreds of years.
Yes.
And the amount of history attached to these brands themselves, like you take even like some big brands today, you know, you look at McDonald's, you look at Nike, you look at something really new like TikTok, they've got absolutely zero legacy. Nike,
yeah, zero, you know, yeah. Exactly.
like Nike's starting to come into it a wee bit. You know, people would look at like an Air Force and be like, okay, da 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 da. But you know, you look at Rolexes, and you know, these watches being issued to soldiers during the war,
yeah,
and then these being passed down to, you know, grandkids and stuff. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I mean, that comes to the funny bit is, right, because everyone knows Rolex. Rolex, but Rolex is one of the younger watch brands.
Yeah, that's
funny
right.
enough. 1905. Mm-hmm. So, there's no brand. Apple wasn't, of course not, because we didn't have computers in 1905, did we?
Pass. Not any good ones anyway.
Not any good ones. And no iPhones and stuff. Like, I mean, there's not many things that are still as hot today mm-hmm. as and were founded that long ago. That heritage, that mm-hmm. like, I love stories, mate. I just love stories, and a Rolex, the Rolex journey, the Rolex story is a story on its own. Like mm-hmm. Hans Wilsdorf, German guy, by the way.
There you go. Yeah. Shout out to Jackie. Let's
shout
go.
Shout out you. Founded in London. Like, a lot of people don't know that, but mm-hmm. Rolex was founded in London, Hatton Gardens. If you now go to Hatton Gardens, you get robbed, but that's a different story. Like,
I remember a couple, like one of the really interesting facts that I learned whenever I was working with you was the fact that, you know, gold Rolexes are not necessarily the most valuable ones, and that's like steel Rolexes are a way better buy. Tell us why, because it really surprised me.
Like it's the value is not in the commodity, it's not in the object, it's not in the actual materials. The value is, of course, driven by demand. Mm-hmm. I mean, nowadays there's a lot of big demand for gold Rolexes as well. Like 3 years ago, you could bought any gold Rolex if you wanted to, even mm-hmm. gold Daytonas. Today, not even possible anymore.
Really?
No, they're not even in the windows.
Crazy.
So it's crazy. So that literally picked up, right? But to give you an idea, this, like, if I show you a vintage, we've talked about this, a vintage Daytona, right? Mm-hmm. Like the material, that same movement was used by other brands and were selling. That exact movement that vintage let's call a reference number, right? A Rolex 1963, mm-hmm. Rolex Daytona was introduced, right? Reference number 6239. We have the first and earliest generation of that watch, right? We have that in the shop, right? Mm. You'll never see another one in your life again, right? And we have one here that's unbelievable. We've one of the most insane collections in Europe of vintage watches and important watches. But this 6239 with this movement was featured in other movements, other watches as well, which are now for sale for 80, 90 quid on eBay, right? Exactly that movement, right? But this exact 6239 is worth 200 grand,
crazy.
Right? It's not the materials that define the price, it's the importance of that object that drives the price, and because of that the importance of that object, there's a huge demand on it.
Yeah,
you can have a very important object, but no one knows about it, no one cares about it. Mm-hmm. then it's still a worth, then it's a worthless piece.
Yeah.
But everyone cares about this object, mm-hmm. or a lot of people care about that object. So therefore the price is significantly higher.
Unbelievable.
Like, it's bonkers. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy money, but it's like,
how'd you get to Northern Ireland?
By car.
A long drive. What is it, 25?
No, it fucking, it's actually quite easy. I always say it's a four and a half hour drive.
What?
From Amsterdam to Belfast, but I'm cheating a bit there. Like,
Eurotunnel and boat then, was it?
No, Eurotunnel.
No Eurotunnel?
No, mate. That's an 8 hour drive. Like,
what'd you do?
IJmuiden is a harbour town, okay. Next to Amsterdam, right? IJmuiden, Newcastle.
And did you just sail from there?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And so you board the boat at about 5 in the evening. And the next morning at 9 o'clock, you're in Newcastle, England.
Unbelievable.
And then you drive 4.5 hours to Cairn Ryan. And then you take the ferry to Belfast.
I mean, that's handier than I expected, actually.
It's so handy.
Because, you know, we've driven to Germany, I think, twice, and it was maybe a 30-hour go every time.
Yeah, but, like, you're going through the Eurotunnel, yeah, and bollocks. No, mate.
Going through Belgium.
And Amsterdam.
Having to drive through Amsterdam. Oh.
Amsterdam to the German border, you can say hi. You can make a wee stop if you want. 100%. Like. I mean, 100%. Just saying. Amsterdam to the German border is two hours.
Unbelievable.
No, it's an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Crazy. And so what brought you here? You touched on a little bit.
Like, I needed a restart, mate. Of course, one of my other passions, I have two passions in life, watches and football, as you may know. But I wanted to move here and got an opportunity to play football here, which unfortunately didn't take more than a few weeks and I broke my ankle. And long story short, big disaster. But I needed a new start in life, mate. I was massively unhappy with myself. I was not adding value anywhere. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
I'll be honest, my memory is fogs around this, but you did work for a social media startup in Holland, or that?
Yeah, Groupon. I worked for Groupon.
Was that Groupon?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Funny, yeah. Well done.
And then, so
and I
was
also,
it Linfield that you were playing with?
Yeah, that was the aim. That was the aim. Yeah. Never made it. But
so you break your ankle.
Yeah.
2 weeks in.
Yeah, 2 weeks in.
Carnage.
Yeah, absolute bonkers.
And like, you're in this new place. Why Belfast?
Because like it just seems like easy stop. Like let me explain this to you. Right. I had never been on a ferry with my car.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And I had one ferry, Newcastle.
Yay. You were like, the boat trip looks great. Let's go to Belfast.
And then I found another place, right?
Yeah.
And booked a hotel at Alfred Street, the Premier Inn, and stayed there for a couple of days and really, really started to like Belfast from the first moment I was there. I loved it.
Unreal.
Just the vibe and people were so nice. I remember I arrived the day after my birthday, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Day after my birthday, I promised my mom to at least be my birthday in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Like, you see,
yeah.
So, and then I left an old Volvo packed with everything I owned.
Unbelievable.
So just a few clothes, PlayStation 3.
Vintage.
Vintage, like nowadays. And I think some stupid computer or something, thing that was falling apart. And that was me gone.
Wow.
And didn't really plan Belfast, but I wanted to see what it was like. And I didn't know anything about it. Like, I genuinely didn't know anything about it. Arrived, really, really enjoyed it. Funny enough, my oldest Belfast friend I met in that period.
Really?
And he has the same surname as you, Andrew Thompson.
Unbelievable. What a
legend. He's a lecturer at Queen's, actually.
Very cool.
He's actually a lecturer. He works at Queen's now. And that was me in Belfast all of a sudden. And it's like, I'm going to play football. And that was it. I'm going to make a few quid playing football. But
so football dreams literally die on the pitch?
Yeah, exactly.
What on earth do you do?
I mean, I needed a job. I needed a job. Like, I had met a girl. So I had an easy way out, right? So I have failed in absolutely everything in life. Everything I've done prior to this. I failed, right? I failed. And that was like, I came here and I said, I'm not going to disappoint my parents again.
Mm.
I'm not going to fail on this. This happened, this ankle thing. And people always say it happened to me. no, no, this time it's not happening to me. I'm going to make this work, right? And I needed to find a job, and I was kind of fortunate that there was a call center here that needed Dutch speakers, etc. So I got a job there. Yeah, so it was quite handy. I think the guys were concentric, but I was fired after 3 or 4 weeks anyway. But it's not the point. But I needed to get a job, so I got a job, and I remember my I was then from after the hotel, I had a place. Eglantine Avenue. And you know what? The first time I ever drove from Eglantine Avenue was from Lisburn Road towards Malone.
Yeah.
Right? So I drove that and I just had this Canadian vibe. I've never been in Canada,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
never.
Yeah.
But I just see this, all the trees there, and then you see the church in the
100%,
back.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, this is so fucking oh, that was so beautiful. I was like, yo, this is my place. Got a house there, shared it with a few other Dutch guys. Didn't last long, and I got fired quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I needed to get another job in Belfast.
Did you ever work for Vodafone? I don't know. All this stuff's popping up now. I'm talking
so,
to you.
First two call centers in Belfast, both fired. And people say, fired. Yeah, it's because I'm very straight. I'm straight and as narrow, and I don't really do politics, if you know what I mean. You see what I mean? And I intend to come late.
Yeah, right.
I intend to come late. I'm not a very early bird. These weren't the ingredients for a very good employee. But you know what? We'll sit the ride out. And I got an opportunity in Dublin. Vodafone, again, Dutch speakers. Like, it was just Dutch roles the whole time. And I just had the feeling I failed in the Netherlands. So now I come here and I'm
doing the Dutch thing over here.
Being a Dutch thing here. And it's like, no. No, this is not good. But Vodafone, and I owe a lot to a good few people at Vodafone. I didn't left Vodafone being very happy, but the people that have given me not only the opportunity, but also stick by me and also allowed me to work in my strength. I was doing very well for Vodafone, but Vodafone, my manager at that time, also just didn't look at the finer details. I drove for 3.5-4 years from Bambridge County down, because by then from Eglantine Avenue I met a girl, and we then moved to Bambridge, and I said, you know what, I didn't want to be separated from her and live in Dublin, so I'm driving this every day, and everyone declared me crazy.
Madness.
Carrick Mines, Junction 15 and the M50. The last bloody exit on the fucking worst motorway ever.
Jeez Louise.
So every day I drove from Bambridge County down to Carrick Mines, Junction 15, to go to work for Vodafone. And I started as a lead gen. Then I became a sales exec, and then I became an account manager, and then I became a more senior account manager. That's it. And I still today I am in touch with a lot of guys that still work there, and
that's
also
cool,
people
man.
That left. So I didn't leave because I was very happy. I was very unhappy.
Yeah.
But still I have friends there. What I mean?
So I guess for me, the missing piece of the puzzle, and this is probably the thing I'm fuzzy on. So if this story is going on here, then parallel, what's the watch story?
No, the watch story is very simple.
Because you clearly, even whenever, when I met you, you were the most knowledgeable person about watches that was probably walking the island of Ireland when you showed up here. So where does that all come from?
No, I've always been obsessed with watches from a very young age, right? And watches was my life, mate. I loved it so much and tried to fix it and do whatever. So I've done that from a very young age. Never did I think it would be in any way, shape, or form possible for me.
So what are you doing? Are you taking watches apart and putting them back together? Yeah. Where are you getting your knowledge? Are you getting stuff from the internet? Are you getting stuff from magazines?
Read books. I have ADHD, right? I can't bloody read a book. Yeah. Not because I can't read. I can read fine. But I can't keep my eyes on one sentence. And I'm reading a sentence, but it doesn't save.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there wasn't many things I was very interested in, which would then save in my...
Yeah.
And watches was one of them.
Wow.
So yes, I would read. I would have read a lot, and I would have been active a lot and would have, but not just reading, taking watches apart. I remember my mom and dad buying me a Seiko for my birthday, my 16th birthday, in an outlet center in the Netherlands. And I took that watch apart and he was fucking raging. Like, but like, I mean, that's what I want. I loved it. I wanted to understand the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
And that was me. That is my niche. That was just my wee. So I've always been very passionate about it, but never did I think it would be in any way, shape or form possible to be not only in the watch industry, but absolutely I would never be able to sell luxury watches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rolex was something unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was, my father saved up half his life to give my mom her Rolex when she turned 40. Like, I mean, that's how I grew up with Rolex. You see what I mean? Yeah. So knowing that is so pristine and so special and so important. I mean, like, I wanted to be a part of that, but I never thought it would be possible. Yeah.
So then bridge the gap then between Vodafone and starting Pride and Pinion.
I was very unhappy at Vodafone. I was very unhappy. I wasn't at the right place and right. And again, this was a team full of Dutch people, and maybe I'm just too direct or too straight or too whatever. I don't know why. I like to look at myself in the mirror and think, where did it go wrong? But I just don't know. But damn, I'm fucking grateful that it went wrong. Like, oh my God. I am so grateful that it went wrong. And like, I was on the verge of depression, being ignored for a year, for shy of a year. And it was rough, like, but there and then, I remember this quite vividly, actually. This was the end of August 2017. And I drove to the office, and I was the first one in the office. I arrived at 7:30. And you go down with a parking, and you go left in a parking. And it's like, and all of a sudden, it went in my head, this is the last time I'm going to drive here.
Wow.
I just went in. Like, no prior. I, of course, thoughts that I didn't want to be there, good. But no, I'm done with this. I'm not going to do this again. So I walked in, like, I parked the car, sat there for a few minutes. Like, and I'm seeing this all, like, again now in front of me, thinking about it. And I grabbed my key card, stepped out of the car, walked to the elevator, got the elevator up, got into the office, walked to the printer, got a piece of paper out of the printer, wrote my resignation letter, left it on the desk of my manager, walked out.
Wow.
Drove back. Done. And then I realized, fuck, what have I done?
What have I done?
What have I done?
My rent.
My fucking rent. What the fuck? So my partner, right? My partner was a first year doctor at that time, right? So
rolling in it. Absolutely rolling in it.
No, I didn't tell her for months, mate.
Oh, did you not?
No. Oh. I didn't tell her for months. Like, she was this smart girl and being very, like, ambitious. And I'm just like, I didn't have the best job, but I also just quit it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was like, but I knew that I needed to do that. Yeah. Right. And I was so miserable. It was it was going ahead or
staying
work or I wouldn't. I had the most disgusting images in my mind and in my head. Yeah. So I needed to do that to save myself.
Yeah.
And, I drove back. Right. And weirdly enough, I got this, okay, I'm going to say it. I was on my phone driving, right? I got this notification of like AIB or whatever. You see these ads sometimes coming up, right?
Yeah.
So there's a loan approved within fucking 2 minutes or something. And I was like, just me driving back, right? Driving back from that, just quit my job, right? Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna get a loan of 50,000 euros. And I'm going to buy a watch and I'm going to sell it.
Wow.
Right, went into the bank and was like, 50 sounds realistic. They'll not give me that, right? They're not good. Like, that's not realistic, right? Fuck it. Went into the bank, applied for this loan thing. I went in and said, no, you need to do this on the app.
Jesus.
Or on your internet thing.
Typical banks these days.
Bank, you need to do it on a computer.
Hi, I'm here in person. Hi, can you just call the helpline?
It's like in the bank applying for it. No, you need to do that on the computer. But I still had that work computer on me, So I grabbed that computer, went into the car, used my phone for internet, and struggling because it was like 3G or something.
Yeah,
it took bonkers ages.
Yeah.
Got applied, got approved.
Whoa.
like within like 30 seconds, I got 20,000 euros and they said, now I'm going to buy watches. Now I'm going to do it. And on the 1st of September 2017, I opened my Instagram account, watchni.co.uk, and that the rest is history, funny enough, isn't it?
Man.
It's really weird looking. Like, I don't think it's been, I can't even remember the last time I thought about that journey, that whole journey of from when we started that idea but to where we are now. But it's been the journey of my life. Like the one thing that would have made my that made my parents proud, that made my dad proud, and damn well I'm so incredibly fucking grateful for where I am now. Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of discussion around, is it important to do something you're passionate about, or is it something, or is it more important just to get really good at something and do that? You would be a big passion guy.
Oh yeah, no, but you can't be good at something if you're not passionate about it. How can you excel in something you don't like? Like, that's impossible. You can only be the best at something if you're really, really passionate about it. And you can only be successful in something if you're better at it than someone else.
Well, I mean, I love the story if, you know, even you reading. You know, you say, like, I don't want to read any books.
I can't read, mate.
And then literally...
You gave me this book years ago called Willpower Doesn't Work.
I did, and, that's right.
And I'll never forget that because it was actually quite important. It was about changing your social circles.
Yeah.
And I was only able to read it 3 pages, and that were the best 3 pages of my life. And so, like, I don't need more. Like,
look at that, you got your investment.
Yeah, you see what I mean? Done. That was your, like, I mean, it's key. But... like, I struggle so much.
But you'll devour watch content. Like, you know, I remember you, like, reading all these articles and all these magazines.
Yeah, but that's my interest.
It's unbelievable.
I love it so much. Because, and then it becomes easy.
So how do you stay on top of things now that you're at the top? Like, now, like, you have all this expertise.
I wouldn't say I'm at the top. Like,
well I mean...
No, like, I mean, I'm nowhere near where I'm nowhere near where we're going to be. Right?
Yeah, well, that's
so
true.
So we will have another conversation in 3 years, which is going to be completely different.
100%.
I'll
be interviewing you in like some sick penthouse in like Manhattan or something. Nah. Like, Nico, do you remember me?
Fuck that. I'm not leaving Belfast, mate. Fuck that. I'll be fucking sitting on the fucking Falls Road or something for the crack. No, I'm not leaving Belfast, so that will not happen. But I love this country too much.
Okay, so how do you keep improving your own watch knowledge now, considering you do know a lot? How do you keep development in that area?
It's because I read every day about watches and stuff, and I watch videos, and it kind of comes naturally. How do you become better in racing a car? It's just like racing a car, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just because it's all I want to do. This is I will die holding a watch in my hands or on my wrist or talking about watches. It's even if it's my last breath.
Yeah.
This is what I'm gonna do. I want to see my future. Like, of course, you have kids, I don't, but this is not just. A business. This is my kids. I want my future kids to work in this business and be passionate about it.
Yeah.
I want to do what my grandfather has done. You see what I mean?
100%.
And I think that's the nice circle of it. If I look back at my grandfather, that is what I want to do. This is not just a wee business now, but I know what we've done has never been done before because we're in an industry which is led by very old-fashioned, very long-term families.
And slow-moving.
Slow-moving. And we have just gone from 0 to 100 in 3.5, 4 years, right?
Like, unbelievably disruptive.
Yes, very, very well. But now as well, the business is self-sustainable, which wasn't prior to that. I can be hit by a bus now and the business will still be profitable.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. Now it's time for a next step, a next step, a next step.
So how have you started to remove yourself from the business? And how do you, like, because this is literally, it's your pride and joy, it's your baby. How do you even emotionally start to, like, give ownership to your team and stuff? Because I would find that really hard.
It's the biggest struggle of my life.
The reason why I have the type of business I have where it's just me is this very thing. I struggle delegating. I struggle giving ownership over. So how have you, because you've done that.
Something happened to me which I needed to needed to make change, right? Mm-hmm. Medically, right? I won't go in greater detail, but it made me realize that if I'm not there, the business is not running, mm-hmm. right? And COVID as well made me realize that, I mean, let me say this out loud, right? COVID, for a lot of people, has been bad.
Sure.
But it's for a lot of people also been good.
Yep.
Right? It changed my life. It changed my business. And it helped me go into where we are now. Not COVID, the disease, because that's a terrible disease.
Yeah, but circumstances. Or a terrible,
it's horrible. But it also made me learn a lot about being an entrepreneur. Mm. I never called myself an entrepreneur or a businessman. Now I call myself an entrepreneur 100%. Because I steered our ship to safe harbor.
Yeah.
By making decisions that were vital, right? So the big change for me was when I realized that okay, we're not selling anything when I'm not there. Mm. So we need to change that. And I'm not this business leader, mate. I don't know how to run a business. I'm not good in running a business. Let me be very clear. I'm horrible in running a business, right? I'm absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I can't do that. So I found someone that is a superstar, which is the absolute polar opposite of me, which is very conservative. Mm-hmm. Stephen is very conservative. I hired Stephen. He was the country manager of Goldsmiths here in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it for years for him to join the business, but he never, like, we talked about it and then we didn't. Then we talked about it. It's like, I can do it. I can still do it. And then COVID hit. I realized I couldn't. I just couldn't. Mm. Like, I just don't have the capacity. I don't have the capabilities, the knowledge, neither the willpower to do it. And the skill set, the people skill set. I just give everything away. Like, I mean, and Stephen joined and like, I don't have to be on the work floor, but mm-hmm. now comes the thing, right? Being on the work floor is the one thing that brought me where I am now. Mm-hmm. Being on the work floor is my biggest passion, talking to people, selling them a watch. But like now they're helped by an incredible team, mm-hmm. which we sit and meet. Like, the team, we're always together, and we have a structured meet twice a week, structured meeting where mm-hmm. we talk about watches and stuff, and like, they need to know absolutely everything of every single watch that we have in our shop.
Yeah.
And it's passion above profits. Sounds stupid, but that's how I've started this business. That's how I got the business where it is today, and that's where we're gonna take over this industry. And what we've done, what I said before, what we've done in the industry has not been done before. Mm-hmm. Because it's been run always by long-term family businesses and jewelers and blah, blah, blah. All been well. We've done something. We've carved our way in. Mm-hmm. But now the road is very clear to where we're going.
Unbelievable.
And it's not just me. I have an incredible team I wouldn't be nowhere near I am today. Mm-hmm. The business would be nowhere near where it is today without these people.
Yeah.
So like, there's a funny thing, a few factors. If I started this business in any other country than Northern Ireland, fuck, it would fail.
Love that.
Any day of the week, it would fail. If I didn't meet the people at the right time, it would fail. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have the boys now here today, it would have failed. Like, Steve Jobs once said, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. Mm. And damn, I never understood that. I tried to figure that one out because you're trying to be successful. And But damn, I'm looking backwards and I can connect every single dot.
Wow.
These weird coincidences, they all fall into place. But you need to be there first. You need to put yourself in that position first. And that's where hard work comes in.
Oh, man. Yeah, and there's tell us about the, I'm going to say mural, it's probably not the right word, but the mural in the staff room.
Yeah, I always say I'm not, like, the mural in the staff room is very, it says hard work beats talent, mm-hmm. but like, hard work, it's is my father taught me everything on that. It's hard work beats talent. It's I'm putting my life, my soul, my not just money, but my life, my soul, my everything is in this business. I've sacrificed everything, a wedding, a marriage, a future family. I've sacrificed that prior to that. Because I was engaged, supposed to get married and stuff like that, but the business came first. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I needed to make choices. Hard work. The hours. Mm-hmm. If you believe in something, and even if everyone says it's not, if you believe in this, if you're just so convinced of it, mm-hmm. put everything in it. Everything. And that's what I've done. And I'm not the most talented guy. I'm definitely not the smartest person on the planet. I'm definitely not the brightest person on the planet, but there's one thing I can be, it's the hardest fucking worker on the planet. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do, and I put everything in this business, and it reflects it now. Mm-hmm. And still today, we're nowhere, when like certain processes are not going well, or we can't always make everyone happy, and that breaks my heart.
Sure.
And that literally, that I feel that in the core of my fucking existence. Like if something goes wrong, or someone buys a watch and is not happy with it, or it's mm-hmm. not like, I mean, no, I want to buy that watch. Here's your money back. Please have the watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I want people to have this experience mm-hmm. with us, mm-hmm. with the crown, with Pride and Pinion, with my baby. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
100%.
It needs to be about experience above anything. Passion above profit.
So good, man. So good. There's so much more I could jump into. You know, we could do a whole hour on
how long
social
are we
media
on, anyway?
Do you want to know? It's 45 minutes.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, no, I'm on the fence. I'm like, should we do a wee bit on... So I have my stock questions at the end, right?
Yeah.
So it's like 4 or 5 questions. And then I'm like, also would be keen to do like a wee tiny, like 5 minute on the social media stuff. But I also would love to hear a couple of stories of like some of your craziest stories, some of your craziest watches that you've sold, you know, going to get certain watches around the world. You know, I think there's
are you referring to Venezuela?
Mate, I don't even know about Venezuela. There's been so many. I'm like, I don't even know. I don't even know where to go.
I recently went, where did I say? Yeah, I said this on the YouTube channel. I talked about Venezuela. Yeah, fuck, I had the cartel or some fucking cartel.
Serious?
Running after me in Venezuela. Yeah, 2018 when I had 4 GMTs Pepsis, and I got them from Venezuela. But
yeah,
that is bonkers, mate. thinking back, so I said to my that time fiance, because I was working was my life and I didn't want to go on holiday, right? So I said, yeah, we'll go to this Caribbean island, Curacao, right? Dutch island, fucking unbelievable, beautiful, and like proper Caribbean shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
this will be great. There's no watches there, that's
no
for
watches
sure.
For sure. Done. We'll go there. Now she's happy, we'll go there. Yeah. All good in the plane, etc. And I especially booked business class, mate. I had not a penny to my name, but I wanted to make her so happy that because then the bad news would go that Venezuela's on the coast, Curacao's on the coast of Venezuela, right? So I mean it was all like, so yeah. I didn't tell her. I was fucking petrified for her, mate.
Yeah.
She was fucking scary, like she would kill me. But we were there for a few days, and then we were staying there for 2 weeks, so a few days. It says, do you mind me picking up a watch? It's only at
the
harbor.
It's just
around
the corner.
It's just around the corner. It's just at the harbor. And she's like, you should promise me not to do watches.
Yeah.
I said, it's the only thing. It's the only thing, right?
Yeah.
But
this is like a movie. It's just one watch.
Yeah, something like that.
That would be in the movie trailer. Next thing you know, you see like cut to AK-47 being loaded. You're like,
mate, this is so fucking bad. But I already had this pre-organized, right? And these we you have the in Curacao, you have the wee city, and then you have these wee how do you call that? It's like a market with boats, mm-hmm. like, and these boats come from Venezuela, wee boats, and then they sell fruit, right?
Yeah.
And I got one of those guys already organized to bring me to Venezuela, right? And I was collecting 4 Pepsis that were just introduced by Rolex, right? The 4 Pepsis, first batch of the Pepsis that Rolex would have given to that country, they were going to me.
Wow.
Right? So I've got a Venezuela no baller, right? Done. And I got this driver there on the other side.
You love taking boats to places like Flip Me.
Oh, yeah, boats. I love water, mate. I love water. Anyway, I get to my contact and my dealer gives me the watch. It's all good. Driving back. This was an hour and a half drive, right? In Venezuela. And me driving back, all of a sudden we're tailed by this car. Mate, I've never been as scared in my life.
Really?
I swear. Because I need to pay off a few officials as well get through the border because I was Dutch. And I mean, although that was a Dutch island, you need, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and we were tailed by this car chasing up like fucking, I don't know how fast they were going, but it was the scariest thing ever. And then we just needed to make it to the officials. So to the harbor officials.
Yeah.
And this was like, it took like 15, 20 minutes that we were tailed. And they were trying to take over, and crazy. But these roads were not normal roads, like.
Of course.
So fucking hell, boy. Made it to the officials, and these guys turned around, but they knew that I had fucking four. That time it was about $100,000 worth of watches, like, and that's life changing money for people there, like, if you know what I mean. And that was some journey. Like, that was bonkers.
Crazy. What's the most expensive watch you've bought or sold?
7 million.
Yeah,
7 million.
What type of watch was that?
A very, very special, very, very, very special vintage watch. Right.
Give it away.
Because people would know, or the industry, people would know that. But it's not like this industry needs to, like, this industry is vague, right?
Yes.
Very vague.
Yeah.
Right? Collectors don't want to know, like, certain people don't want to know or don't want other people to know that is that. And people.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, so you have these, you know, these very, very private individuals.
Oh, there's
and then you have like very, very public individuals. You know, you've sold watches to, I feel like, every celebrity on the island of Ireland. And these are people who are really flashing, you know. So yeah,
you have the polar opposite.
Yeah, two opposites, isn't it?
Like, in the past, I would use Pride and Pain. I would have put a lot of clients on there and crack. And then you see a bit of fun and blah, blah, blah. That's all good. But like, it made me realize that sometimes people don't want to.
Absolutely.
Want that. I would be proud having a watch, not because I want to show off, but because I'm just fucking proud.
Absolutely.
See what I mean?
Absolutely.
But other people would be scared that people would think differently, if you know what I mean, and that's fine. But in the 7 million range, you can count the collectors on two hands.
Wow.
And people will know that it was me that specific number, with that specific watch.
100%.
People will know 100%. Exactly that it was me that done the deal.
So tell us about the wee plaque in your boardroom there.
Yeah, that's Billy Billy.
I've never heard of Billy Billy in my life.
Me neither. Until I realized that we have a fuck ton of followers in China or in Asia.
So it's like YouTube for Asia?
Yeah, so YouTube and Google and Facebook and all the other Eastern
just
or
doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist in China. It's not allowed, right? It does exist because I get DMs all the time from people from there. But like, I mean, they all use VPNs and stuff. It's not allowed to use it, right? So they have their own platform called Bilibili. And Bilibili is literally the Chinese YouTube, right? Or the Asian YouTube. Yeah. And we have a channel on there and it's just dubbed and it's quite funny. And you see these Chinese things and we're exploding there. You think that our YouTube is big with 410,000 subscribers. And then we go there and it's like in the millions, like,
jeez Louise,
it's bonkers. And then TikTok,
you're like, pushing a million on TikTok.
Yeah, like fucking, what I read this the other day is like about 50 million views on like TikTok in like 8 months. And I'm like, what?
Crazy.
It's like, that's bonkers.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And so like, again, I'll not dwell on this too much, but in terms of the business, the social media side of the business, I use the word entertainment very, very, very loosely, has become its own business that makes a lot of money.
Pride and Pinion Media.
Separate to the actual watches. It's crazy.
Yeah. Pride and Pinion Media is a separate business now.
Yeah.
With the YouTube channel, with Bilibili, with Facebook, with all the other brand deals that are involved, etc. Separate business indeed. Yeah. It's bonkers. Like,
and you've separated yourself slightly.
Like,
in terms of your name.
Yeah. I needed to separate my name from the business for the simple reason is if I want a self-sustainable business that will stay there for another generation, I need to be stepped up because it can't be about me.
Yeah.
It needs to be about watches.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
100%.
And yes, I am. Yes, I'm the founder. Yes, I'm the CEO. Yes, I'm the sole shareholder. But it can't be about me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we want to grow as a business, and if we want to get to the point where I want us to be, and I think we're running behind, funny enough. And people say, "You're going so fast."
Classic
I'm not fast enough. And I'm like, "No, we could have been further, I think." But
I've never asked you this before. I have no idea what your answer would be. Any desire or any possibility to make your own watch?
No, never? Absolutely not. Because I can't add, I approach everything.
What value can you add?
What value can I add? What value can I add to Belfast? What value can I? It's funny enough, Belfast and Northern Ireland, the people here gave me everything I have today.
Yeah.
Everything. Like I said before, I would have failed in any other country than Northern Ireland, right? But people just relentlessly wanted to help me. Like, I'll put my name out and Chris Suda, and we all know. I am so grateful for absolutely everything here. Mm-hmm. And now it's my time to give back, right? So what can I add value to Belfast, right? For us as a business, it's more tax efficient to be in a different country at the moment.
Sure.
But I don't want to, right? Because it's about Belfast here. And also in the new clothing line that we started, Belfast is imprinted. The name Belfast is imprinted, right?
I love that.
For me, it's really about Belfast. And this shit goes global, right? Yeah. So it's quite cool. Right, I'm very, very proud. But no, I always approach everything with add value. Where can I add value? And me making a watch, I can't. I'm not like I'm definitely. I could do it.
Sure,
but it's not adding value to anyone's life. It's just it is only adding. Like we can make a good bit of money with it, but it's passion above profits.
Sure,
I can't put enough passion in that justifies that watch to be so good and better than everything else. It's breath, passion above profit. Love so that. No, I will never do that.
It's cool. Right, let's go. Land the plane, start questions. Most challenging moment of your life and how did you overcome it?
COVID.
100? Really?
COVID, yeah.
What specifically?
Just
like that feeling of chaos?
I thought I was going to lose it all. And the numbers looked like it.
Really?
I thought I was going to lose the business right off the bat. Shop was closed. I sold half of my stock at big, big losses. I made done about 200 grand loss there. Where Bill, because we're in a merchant, and Bill Woolsey let go on 600 staff. I said to the boys, I'm not going to let you guys go. And I sold half of the stuff that I owned myself and put that money in deposito. Made sure that these guys were paid for at least 9 months. And in 9 months, I'll figure it out. But that was the challenging moment of my life because after being the big man or acting like the big man in front of your team saying, I will figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I was home crying in bed.
100%.
Every day, I already gave up on myself and gave up on my business.
Mm-hmm.
I had literally given up on my business, and I was like, okay, then I now need to get a normal job. I've done it. I've tried it. I've tried it.
Mate, that's crazy.
I've tried it. I'm literally stood there, and then all of a sudden I woke up at 1 or 2 a.m. and I rewrote everything that we've done. Mm-hmm. And that day, I called Stephen. Of that morning, I called Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a few quid left over because furlough was announced.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to sell. I didn't have to make these losses, to be fair. But I mean, fuck it. You can only connect the dots looking backwards. Funny enough. But, and I knew I wasn't able to do it alone. I called Stephen. I made him an offer. He couldn't refuse. Funny enough, I made him an offer. I made him a very good offer. And he said, I mean, we're going to do this.
Wow.
And from that moment, it felt like I spread the pain, but all of a sudden it dawned to me from when I arrived, the reason why I moved to here, I'm not going to fail. I'm not going to let this fail. I've put too much in this. I am not going to fail. And, that was definitely the most challenging moment of my life.
Wow.
Yeah, prior to that was football, big injury, but I've really, I was done. I was done probably with life as well.
Yeah.
At that moment, yeah.
Oh, man.
That was bonkers,
chuffed for you. So tough, though.
Oh, mate, it's bonkers, but I said myself this, if I am a captain, if your ship sails in a storm and you're a captain of that ship and you can't sail your ship out of a storm, you shouldn't be a captain, you should be a sailor.
Wow.
And I've said that to myself. I am a fucking captain.
Man, I'm going to write that down.
Yes. That quote so me on it, because that's me. If you like sail, if you can't sail your ship out of a storm, you shouldn't be a captain, you should be a sailor. And I'm a captain, and that's how I got my ship into a safe harbor. I am my worst enemy. Myself, I am my worst enemy. And the doubts creep in my mind every single day, every moment of the day. But you know what? Fucking get it done.
100%.
Hard work.
I mean, I'm literally writing this down.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have no problem with a wee 20-second
look at that
silence here.
Look at that, Nico. That was the day I rewrote my entire business. That night, I was like, if I am a captain, if I think I'm a captain, I have to show it right now. And keep in mind, I just quit my fucking engagement. And I was in the house. I was alone. I was, wasn't allowed to leave the house. Mm-hmm. And it was tough, mate. That was, Jesus Christ. That was dark. Like,
that is dark.
But now, it's those moments where you absolutely think that there's no way out. Mm-hmm. There's always a fucking way out.
Yeah.
And those deep, 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 deep moments where you think that there's no other option, that only builds up resilience for now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm more resilient because of that.
Yeah.
The business is where it is, not where it is now. Keep in mind, we have 12, 14 people now.
Yeah.
Don't even know. Like, it's fucking bonkers. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so give me the flip side then. What about the most successful or the most proudest moment of your life?
I don't know.
So I'm not going to take that, because I was expecting you to say, I haven't got there yet. But no, I want to hear it.
Last time I was massively proud was when I saw, this was on a Saturday when the shop was just reopened and there was a queue outside of the door, and I was so proud of that. So I'm like, oh my God. And it's that's my proud, but
yeah.
My proudest moment. Like, I mean, mate, I have fucked up everything in life prior. I have nothing to be proud of yet, but I will. Mm. I will. That will happen. That will come. I'm happy. I'm grateful. I am very fortunate. But I'm not fucking finished, and I'm not happy yet. Happy where I'm sure. Happy-ish, but I'm happy, but not happy, know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm not satisfied. Mm. We're not finished. We have so much more impact to do, and I want to do so much more in Belfast. I want to really, really contribute, not just money-wise, but also hands-wise.
Mm.
Like, I want to do good stuff, and I want to promote Belfast, and we now have a global platform where we can do that, which is incredible. Which is my passion project next to watches.
Yeah, yeah.
So watches is the connecting, it's the connector between everything. It so it's fun enough. Like,
speaking of connections, if you could take anyone from Northern Ireland out for a cup of coffee or a pint, dead or alive, who would you take? Where would you take them, and why?
What do you call her? What is her name again?
I don't know.
Arlene. Arlene
Big
Foster.
Arlene.
Yeah. You know why? Like, I don't give a shit about politics, right? Sure. I don't give a shit about politics. But that woman got some shit over her, like.
Oh, mate. So dirty.
Mate. Like, that is the person you want to speak to, because that shows resilience. You can learn so much from that. How did she deal with that?
I actually think you and Arlene would get on like a house on fire.
I have met her. You know that?
Really?
I've met her in, how do you call that place? The golf thing, the Open.
Yeah.
And I stood up. I swear, Oscar stood her.
Did you salute her?
Mate. She asked me, oh yeah, what are you doing? Like, how long are you in Northern? How long are you in Northern Ireland? I said 7 years, and I'm not fucking leaving. I had this whole Wolf of Wall Street thing.
Yeah, DiCaprio moment.
I stood up like this, I swear, and I'm not fucking leaving. Ian Paisley Jr. was in there as well. They were all on the floor laughing, right? Funny enough, but I had no idea who Ian was or who I don't give a shit, mate. Yeah. It's not my fucking problem, right? Yeah. Like, they're people. Yeah. They're people. 100%. And I just see them as people.
Yeah.
And Arlene has gone through hell and back and has got so much shit over, and she's still standing.
Yeah.
She's fought against the odds. And people that have fought against the odds are the people that will can learn me a thing or two, if you know 100%. What I mean.
And mate, there was a classic, something amazing happened recently. What was it? It was, I don't know, a big day. I'm not political, as you know. Like, there was a big day in like the UP politics where like all this carnage was going on, and she was out at this point. So she literally, like, in the middle of the storm, she just put a wee tweet up. She's like, just here in Dean's enjoying a lovely wee lunch, smiley face. And you're like, what a savage.
Yeah,
that is absolutely brutal.
Yeah. You see what I mean? I think, again, not as the politician, but as the person.
100%.
How are you able to be so fucking strong?
Yeah.
I want to know your secret, because I need something of that, some of that. And for me as a person, I respect that so much.
That's
right?
Cool, man.
I think definitely, and we all can learn a bit from that. Yeah. And to be completely honest, Northern Ireland is let me say this: Northern Ireland isn't a good place, right? And I'm so fucking proud to be here and be involved in Belfast and being in Northern Ireland. This is my country now. I will die on this soil. Done. I haven't even got approval yet if I can stay, but after Brexit, but we'll figure that one out. Genuinely,
EU settlement scheme, you'll be fine.
Yeah, but I applied, but I still have no answer yet.
Really?
I haven't. But I will literally, like, genuinely, I will die on this soil, like, dumb. But like, if I see where Northern Ireland was when I arrived to where it is now, mate, this place is gonna be booming.
And that's what? I say only, but that's 8 years, isn't it?
That's 8 years.
Like, August, 8 years. Crazy.
Yeah. Change has been crazy. The people have always been the same. Aye. Absolute mad bastards. And I absolutely love it. Like, I love it. Like, and I remember going from, like, my colleagues going from paycheck to paycheck to go for the pub. Like, I mean, I love this country so much. This is my place, mate. This is my place.
Here's a real thinker. And take your time. Like, people take sometimes like literally a minute to think the answer for this. What is the kindest thing that someone has ever done for you?
A lot of people have done a lot of kind things in their lives towards me, right? And I've not always repaid them accordingly. Definitely here in Northern Ireland, a lot of people have been standing by them with me. Like the odds, even if the odds were against me, like, that's why I love this place so much. But by no means to devalue any other thing that anyone has ever done, but I'll tell you one thing: that if Chris Suter didn't do what he did for me, put my business out, open his doors for me, we wouldn't have the business today.
Incredible.
So, that's weird. Like, thinking back, I actually get a thing in my throat here, but he knows that, and I tell him that, and he deserves that credit. I so annoying as fuck nowadays with that GGG, but I tell him that as well. Like, I tell him that, don't worry, I tell him that as well, right in his face, right?
Yeah,
and he knows who I would think about it, but, like, Without Chris, genuinely, without what Chris has done to put me out, keep in mind, I'm a foreigner selling watches out of the boot of my car.
100%.
Would you buy a Rolex of 10 grand out of a foreigner off the boot of someone's car? Would you? No. Right? Any normal person would say no.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, that, he put his name for me out there, and people trusted me because of him. And that's that wee push that one person sometimes needs, because that one person has failed his entire life.
Yeah.
And this was his one project that he was not going to fail in.
Yeah.
But I needed that wee help, that wee push. So meeting Chris Suter and done what he's done for me, we all wouldn't have a job today.
Wow.
The YouTube channel wouldn't have existed today. We wouldn't have been doing this podcast today. Right. So that is the kindest thing that someone has ever done to me. Mm-hmm. Because I come from the Netherlands, and in the Netherlands, it works this way. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? I'll help you if you help me.
Yeah.
I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine.
Yeah.
Chris Suter never asked anything in return, never expected anything in return. He'd done it just to help this kid out.
Yeah, yeah.
That he barely knew. Mm-hmm. See what I mean?
Unbelievable, mate.
Funny leg.
Class.
He's a wee fucking bollocks leg.
Mate, what an unexpected conversation. This has gone. This has gone everywhere, hasn't it?
Jesus, mate. Flipping. Makes me fucking...
Tears flying. No, but genuinely, like, it's unbelievable.
Genuinely, like... I mean, it's been a rough road.
Yeah, it has.
It's going to be even worse, but it's, you know what?
You've done well.
No, like, I mean, the team and everyone has done well.
Sure.
Like, I mean, incredible, but we're nowhere near where we, mm-hmm. where I want us to be as a business, yeah. and that will thrive.
We'll stay in this lane just to close then. Final question. If you could, let me see, where do you set this up? If you could go back to, you know, in a time machine and hop on the boat with Nico as he was moving over to Northern Ireland and you had a couple of minutes of his time, what would you say to him?
Just sail it out. Just sail it out. Just everything... looking backwards, right? Again, coming back, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. Everything, the whole journey, everything just makes sense, but it only makes sense when... Now it makes sense to me. Now I understand every struggle I had when I was a kid, every struggle I had in my career in school, my career at work. Now it makes sense. Now, but just sail it out. Just... don't ever give up, mm-hmm. right? I have had moments where I gave up on myself, which were the toughest moments of my life, and I had that a few times, but I'm very hard on myself, right? Mm-hmm. I expect a lot from other people, but I expect more from myself. Mm-hmm. So, but just sail it out, take it the way it comes, and never... ever give up. That person, I think I gave up a few things too many, mm-hmm. too quickly, that I just didn't I was too scared or whatever. Now, Matthew, to be completely honest, I'm not scared anymore. Mm-hmm. I am not afraid of anything anymore. I'm going straight for a home run here. Mm-hmm. And this bit, like, this is the last, this is my legacy, this is gonna be everything. Yeah. This is not a business for 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
This is, we will be talking, or people will be talking about this business in 50 years. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to create.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm creating today. Mm-hmm. And I was lazy. I was stupid. I was doing stupid stuff, but I needed to do that to understand what is important in life. Mm-hmm. I was a selfless. I was very selfish. I wasn't a good person. Mm-hmm. That's what I think looking backwards. I'm actually disgusted by the person now looking backwards who I mm-hmm. was maybe 10, 15 years ago. It was always everyone else's fault. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would just say, sail it out, mm-hmm. because the core, you have the good core, you have the core, you have the ingredients, and just don't be scared. Mm-hmm. I think I've been scared too much in my life, where I'm now absolutely fearless, mm-hmm. absolutely fearless. Like, I mean, I'm not afraid of speaking about my ambitions. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to tell you where we're going to, because I'm not telling what we're planning to. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a vital change in me, be less scared, but sail it out.
Awesome, mate. Nico, lad, thank you. Gives a hug. Sure, if Matt Howcock can get away with it, we can't
take it. That was rough. Like, that is rough. I haven't sailed that journey back in fucking long. Cheers. 4 years, I finally deserve the spotlight.
You're a slobber.
Fuck's sake, boy.